First question is, when and where did we first meet?
When you were 11 or 12?
Yes. I think we probably first met at the birthday party where we went to see Annie.
Possibly?
Which was Sarah's birthday party.
Was it?
Yes.
I didn't know I was that generous.
I know. And then I think we came back and ate lasagna and chocolate pudding.
Chocolate pudding. If it was Sarah's party, you would have had lasagna and chocolate pudding. So, without a doubt.
That would have been maybe January 1983.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a long time ago, isn't
it? Yes.
So the next question is, do you drink tea?
Constantly.
Good, I like to hear that. And what's your favourite sort of tea?
English breakfast, nothing but nothing else.
That seems
sensible.
None
of these fancy things.
And you're just back from holiday, so do you take tea with you on holiday?
We didn't, because we were told there were tea-making facilities at the hotel, so it was a mistake not to take tea with us.
I almost always take my own tea bag.
Yes, I shall never make that mistake again.
In fact, sometimes when I'm at Heathrow, I get have to go and buy what would other people would consider souvenir tea to take with me if I'm flying to the States.
Oh,
and
that
I've forgotten,
dreadful.
I will
that
always do that. So the question which I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
As a committed atheist, Janet, I'm not in a position to have an opinion.
Well, that was interesting, because I'm waiting for the atheist to say, yippee, it's dying, that's great.
No.
But I've not found anyone who has actually said that to me yet.
Although I could sit and argue with you till the cows come home, mm-hmm. Religion gives so many people so much comfort, and I'm not the person to try and take that away. If people are happy, mm-hmm. I'm content with that. My brother's been church warden at his local church forever.
Mm.
He's happy.
Yeah.
We're allowed to believe different things, and we shouldn't impose our beliefs on other people. I'm happy for there to be a range. I'm happy for Muslims to live near me. I'm happy for Hindus to have their temples. I love the little church. We give money to we're friends of the local church because it is such a beautiful building. I want it to stay there. And although I think the Christian ethic is a humanist ethic, which pleases me, it's one way of teaching it, isn't it?
Mm. Interesting, because we're coming on to that in a minute. So I have put your specialist questions. Some of them are to do with you being a magistrate.
Yes.
How long were you a magistrate for is probably the first thing that we need.
37 years, which is quite long.
So were you quite young? Were you the young whippersnapper woman when you were first a magistrate?
Yes. The chair of the bench called me the cuckoo after the midwitch cuckoo.
Right.
Coming in, being something different.
Gosh.
No, he was lovely. He was lovely and welcomed us all with open arms. But yeah, I was quite young. Probably too young, Janet.
Mm.
You need a bit of life experience behind you.
So, if we've got a great long question, but we'll see where it takes us. So, as a vicar in the Church of England, I have a theological basis for my understanding of good and evil. But from your work in the criminal justice system, what have you observed as other people's basis of their understanding of good and evil? And is it the same as your own or different? You could write an essay on this question.
I
understand.
I could. What bothered me the most, I was a mentor to incoming magistrates who have incredible training these days. Our training was largely on the job. They have really in-depth training in the law, application of the law, deciding on sentencing, what sentencing is all about. But they see things in black and white. And I spent so many hours arguing that you've actually got to be a human being and regard them as human beings, because the bulk of people in front of you in the criminal justice system are sad people who cannot manage. They are not intrinsically evil. They've made a mistake. And as life gets more and more consumer orientated, people's needs are changing. What was enough for us isn't enough for young people today. And you have to put yourself in their place. They haven't got what everyone else has got. You don't take it, you have to earn it. And that's the lesson they've got to learn. So putting them in prison isn't going to help. Probation might be able to, working in the community might let them see that there are other ways of acquiring the money that they need to live productive lives. There was something on Radio 4 this morning, and it's on the front page of the Times today, and it made me so angry. Crack dealers, burglars, violent criminals driving taxis. A number of these people are trying to start again. Yeah. They mustn't carry this thing around like a snail's shell forever. We've got to allow people to understand they've made a mistake. It's not the end of the world. They've got to be punished for that mistake because they did it. They've got to be punished. And they accept that. But at the end of it, for goodness sake, let's help them move on. Not condemn them because of their past.
I think that's really interesting for us. We've had a member of the box community has been in prison for a year and is now home on a tag. And you see, you wonder how he's going to actually get reintegrated. Yes. And how he's going to be able to work and support his family, all those exactly. sorts of things.
He's not a different person because he was caught. He's still got those human qualities that made him friends with people beforehand. They can't think he's a different person. He's not. He's made a mistake. He's paid his dues to society, and if society gives him half a chance, he'll realise that and move on.
I think it's.
I was seen as the softy on the bench.
I think for me, it's really important to think about what rehabilitation and reformation really mean for people.
Yes.
And if people have no opportunity for reformation and rehabilitation, so if they're not even able to do any job, they won't be able to reform. They'll have, because they won't see any possibility of a different way of living.
They will offend again. Simple as that. Mm. And, it's heartbreaking how difficult it is for offenders to pay their price to society and then find society rejects them.
Part of last year, so I went to visit this person in prison a couple of times, and I'm also on the podcasting course I did. There was someone from the Shannon Trust, and she said that 50% of prisoners can't read. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting because actually, as a society, we've started failing them quite a long time ago.
Yes.
At that point.
Yes, yes.
The next question is, what were you most proud of and most troubled by during your time as a magistrate?
When I started as a magistrate, oh golly, it's nearly 39 years ago now, because when you're 70, it's that's the end. There was no such thing as domestic violence. I trained to take domestic violence courts, and we would have a whole day of domestic violence. And what is troubling is that society at large in the past has accepted or turned a blind eye. People get very, very upset with magistrates for being so harsh on people. Two women a week, two children a week are murdered by violent partners. Then, of course, two people a day are killed on the road. So, yes, we do come down heavily on motorists, quite right. But it is such a problem, and it's so difficult to treat. And your immediate reaction is, you violent so-and-so. Go to prison now. But if you send them to prison, because the penal service is so starved of money and resources, they don't get the courses that they will get if we put them on probation. And they can go to integrated domestic violence programs, which are very, very good for these guys. Opens their eyes. They're made to confront what they've done. But then what have we done to the probation service? It's been decimated. It's all out to tender. It is soul-destroying being in the criminal justice service at the moment. Of course, the problem is the poor prosecutors are worked, they work their socks off, and they cannot keep up because they've been cut after cut after cut after cut. But I'm most proud of the fact that I think I bought a lot of life experiences. Nasty things have happened to me. And I can bring that, and I think I can relate to how people are feeling when they stand in that witness box. And when a guy who's an alcoholic and has done something awful, and he stands in front of you and says, I thought everybody drank wine by the bottle, I didn't know there was anything wrong with me, and bursts into tears. And the two wingers are, he's putting on a good show. No, he's not. And when a young man, a really young man, has the guts to stand up in court and say, I've got a drink problem, we're there. Because I could say to them, it took a lot of guts to do that, to say that in front of strangers. But it is so unimaginably rare to come across someone who has offended. People read the news, we're swamped with news, and it frightens them. But people are good. I really believe everybody has the potential to be really good given the right circumstances. I think that I've come across very, very few people who have gone out of their way to do something dreadful when they didn't need to get extra funds. There are some, but it is so vanishingly rare. You know lovely people.
I know lots of lovely people. And I know every single person I know has made a mistake in their life.
Yes.
Of some description or another.
Of course.
I mean, I guess that's the theological basis of my faith. But yes, no, it's yes.
Your judgment isn't always as good as it could be.
No. And people, and which boundaries people choose to break or to step over tend to be to do with their life experience.
Yes.
What would you like to be remembered for?
For bringing humanity into decision making on the bench. To make the younger GPs stand back and look at the person and the offence surrounding the offence. Not just see an offence, an offender, but just take some time to think about the person and what's right for them. Yes, some of them, prison straight away, you so-and-so. But for the huge majority, why did they do it? What do they need?
So which category of prison would most of the people who come before the magistrates' court go to? Would they go to a category C prison or...?
I don't know.
Category B?
I don't know. Finishes with making the decision.
What is your favourite thing which begins with T?
Thomas. My favourite thing beginning with S is Samuel, and beginning with K is Catherine.
So it's, I think this year for me has been a really interesting exposure to the criminal justice system. And I think I hadn't really thought about all the implications until this year. Because although I've been vicar in Box for 10 years, and I'd been ordained for 3 years before that, and I'd worked in various other places. And what astounded me was that, once I'd started to think about it, was that nobody had ever asked me to go and visit them in prison before. And I'd never been in touch with any prisoners' families. And I think that's real. But there must have been people who were in prison in my parishes. Yes. So why was this huge disconnect between people who were offending or families of offenders and the church, and Church of England cares for everybody, whether they like it or not? Everybody's in the Church of England parish, however grumpy they might be about it. So for me, that had been kind of just symptomatic of kind of our disconnection with what's going on.
Shame. Shame for the family. I always said, you're not only sentencing that person, you're sentencing all his family, the immediate family, the wider family. It's true.
It's big implications.
Mm. Mm. And then, as we've already said, once you're labelled an offender, that label sticks.
We have a safer recruitment for offenders policy as part of our church policy documents. And when we did it, everybody was like, really? Do we have to? And then we're like, yes, we do.
Yes.
And it's interesting to think who in our community actually that might apply to that we don't know about. And the risk assessment for offenders, which is quite simple for the person who's come back into our community. It's been very simple because it wasn't anything for which we were going to be concerned about, but it has been a really steep learning curve.
Yes. The picture we get of prisons, prisoners rule the roost. Prisons are awful, awful places. As JPs, we're required to visit prisons just to remind us what we're doing to people.
Mm-hmm.
They are horrible. The level of violence, the unhappiness, the suicide rate is going up, the self-harming rate is going up. So let's cut the number of officers so that the offenders are in their cells for longer and longer each day. Don't give them anything constructive to do. Don't teach them to read. There isn't time. There's nobody to supervise.
Yeah.
But it's so easy just to push them out of the way.
I'm quite stirred up about the prison service.
Good.
I don't know what I'm going to do about it.
It has to be there. It has to be there. There are occasions when it has to be, it does have to be used, because society has to feel that the punishment fits the crime. Mm. But it's not right.
We've come to the end of our questions, so I'm going to say thank you very much for seeing me today.
Oh, it's lovely, Janet.